Hi there, this is Ed Sturck again. Just a quick question on MacArthur River. Just with the moving from an area where mining was concentrated on one zone and the three panels there to areas where multiple zones are going to be targeted, is there going to be a corresponding increase in terms of the amount of development that needs to be done and therefore costs as mining transitions to those zones?
The question in regards to whether the moving away from one concentrated area to now what will be two concentrated areas for the next 9 years, but more even further to that, will that increase ongoing development requirements and ongoing cost? I think we've already seen a fair bit of that, actually. In the last number of years, our mine development activities have certainly increased significantly at MacArthur Rivers. There's been probably 3 to 4 to 5 years of preparation to get into these zones. So a lot of the capital that we've expended in terms of mine development and freeze drilling has been identified in our results of the last few years already in the capital we've invested. On an ongoing basis, we certainly expect activity levels to be at least what they are today. There are ongoing challenges with managing a more complex operation that will have some small impact on those activity levels and on costs. What I'd also note, though, is the very high-grade nature of MacArthur River. The unit costs are probably less sensitive to levels of activity like that than they would be in a much lower-grade deposit.
Dave, you're careful to point out that at MacArthur River, the production forecast is based only on mineral reserves. So should I assume that Zone A and Zone B as yet have no reserves?
Zone A and Zone B have no reserves. They are entirely mineral resources. And we're currently carrying out one of the things you'll see tomorrow. We're currently carrying out some further confirmation drilling to evaluate the potential of Zone B, which seems fairly attractive, and that's all work from surface as well. Even that work would not convert resources to reserves. It may change the category of resources depending upon the success of it. But those will remain resources until such time as we have a much denser drilling of those zones and are able to turn a mine plan to them and prove that they are indeed economically viable. A greater drilling density to those resources will require an exploration drift underground that we have started and have been progressing over the last few years, and we need to complete that and to be drilling underground to really get a good delineation of those zones.
And I was wondering to what extent, if at all, you're exploring along strike for new zones A and zones B and so on.
We have been doing that as well. The operating site has been working quite closely with our exploration division over the last number of years, and it was, I think, about 3 years ago where they developed our exploration group developed a more intense and more accelerated exploration program along strike of the P2 fault. That led to the discoveries of Zone A and Zone B, and there has been further drilling to the north, and we're also now starting to turn our attention to the south of the south of the mine workings as well to continue to explore along strike.
Thank you.
Typically, how thick is the shell of ice, and what impact, if any, does the freezing have on radiation?
Okay, typically, the freeze walls at MacArthur River, what we considered for panel 5 as a minimum thickness before starting the work, was 3 to 4 meters. The freeze wall will continue to grow subsequent to that, and a fully mature freeze wall such as this is around panels 1, 2, 3 is, I believe, it's greater than 7 meters. I think it's in the 7 to 8 meter range. It might even be a bit greater than that, and that's another question you can share again at site tomorrow, but it's in that range, so it's quite massive. The impact on radiation is quite significant. One a great source of radon into a mine can be the radon that's carried through the through groundwater, and when the groundwater leaves the formation into the open mine workings, the radon gas often liberates through from the water, and we can, in high-grade mines, have significant challenges managing the radon progeny in the radon gas if we have significant groundwater issues. So the stopping of the groundwater has an enormous benefit in radiation protection measures. As an example, recent development of the drill drift for freeze drilling and eventually for raise boring for lower zone four, was all done with the benefit of having just a freeze shield, which was some freeze holes along one side, the side where we greater expected there to be groundwater. That entire development occurred without there being any radon gas challenges whatsoever through that development. So,
one more question. How long does it typically take to create a meter, let's say, of frozen ground?
I'll tell you the time it took us to get to the 3 to 4 meter thick freeze wall for the cathedral over Zone 2 Panel 5. It was predicted to take 6 months, and it was complete within 6 months. I think it was more in the range of about five, but we still would use 6 months as the measure for a 4 meter thick freeze wall. Any other questions?
Hi, thanks. Ralph Profiti from Credit Suisse. Can you bring us up to date on the pumping capacity for water, and also as it moves upward, what is the update on the storage capacity and processing capacity as well at the plant?
Okay. The pumping capacity at MacArthur River currently installed is in the range of about 1,700 cubic meters an hour. We have increased that by stages and continue to be adding to our pumping capacity over time. We do also have a corporate standard that we maintain that is being addressed both at MacArthur River and at Cigar Lake, which is to ensure that we have sufficient capacity to handle 1.5 times the maximum probable inflow to the mine, in addition to being able to continue to pump the background water inflow that the mine is already making. So sort of background water, maximum inflow times 1.5 added together. And the storage capacity, I don't know the exact numbers underground at MacArthur River. It is similar to what it was in 2003. There's a little bit more mine development that's in place, so it's a mine that relies more on pumping capacity, but has a moderate amount of water storage that can certainly supplement capacity if there's for a number of hours to a few days, depending upon the differential. If you had an inflow that exceeded pumping capacity.
Any more questions for Dave?
Yeah, when you think about your mine at MacArthur River, you occasionally, I guess, you lie awake at night. What worries you the most? What worries you the most?
I can tell you, I think, like everyone, we're all concerned throughout the company about the lessons we've learned in the past number of years from MacArthur River and Cigar Lake, which is largely water inflow. I'll flip it around as well. What pleases me the most is one of the things that I believe you'll see tomorrow when you're at MacArthur River is a culture of very, very strong focus on ensuring we're doing a great deal of technical work before we carry out development in some of the trickier areas. A great focus on very tight operating controls. There's been a tremendous collaboration between our mining engineering and geological technical staff and the contractors and our operations people that monitor the contractors that actually do the work. And there's we've gone from, I'm sure many of you have read the Cigar Lake taproot, it's public information, we've gone from a a place where maybe we were there and learning some lessons that were quite typical, really, of much of mining in the way the practices that were employed, to a mine at MacArthur River where we're now carrying out a development cycle with a very strong focus on how long the ground is unsupported, very tight controls in terms of maximum cutting length of time and maximum cutting distance in our trickier excavation areas. We are employing mechanical means of excavation, which is a road header. You'll see some examples of that tomorrow, at least in pictures, if not in actual case, and all of that to reduce the potential for damage. We're doing our work in those difficult areas under freeze protection. So I actually sleep well at night because I see I'm extremely proud of the great technical work that's been ongoing at site and the excellent operating controls that I see demonstrated by the teams we have in place at all of our operating sites.
So water is a greater problem than radiation, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, radiation exposure, Cameco has demonstrated great control for that for many, many, many years. As we work under certain regulatory limits for exposure annually, the CNSC limits, which are in line with international standards as well, is 50 millisieverts of combined radiation dose for an individual in 1 year, or 100 millisieverts in five. So effectively you have a 20 millisievert a year average with an allowance for upset. We haven't had anyone in any of our mines or development projects in Saskatchewan ever reach that 20 millisievert number for as long as I've been with the company. So I think that's very, very well proven, very controlled, and our levels are actually well below those limits annually. Okay.
Is now a good time to ask a Cigar Lake question, or is it not opportune now?
I'll ask you to wait for after Grant, because he'll know far, far more about Cigar than I would. Any other questions? Okay, then thank you very much.
Got another one here.